Welcome back to the Elaborators podcast. It's producer Simon here, back again hosting with you. And I have Pastor Deanna in the room with me today. If I press the right buttons.
Hey. Oh,
there she is. Look at that. I can do things.
Well done.
Yay.
Yeah.
Now, we've got a good podcast ready for us today. For those that attend with us at Werribee Baptist Church on Sundays, we are talking about global mission, thinking beyond, outside the box.
A passion of mine.
It is a passion of yours. And we'll get to that, I'm sure, amongst this podcast.
We'll see.
But we do have another special guest today. We are going to be talking about what it looks like to kind of break out of our comfort zones, what we all think is success.
Yeah, success. And I like those
Success. what that looks like and what we like changing the filter on that from the worldly and lifestyle successes through to God's mission, how Jesus sees it and explained it to us.
Sounds good.
And to do that, we do have a guest who did preach with us on Sunday, hence why we're running the podcast with him today. I will get some of this introduction correct. He is a former SIM Australia National Director, although I believe still with SIM, which we'll get to in a minute, and an author of the book Redefining Success According to Jesus.
Yep.
Dr. Omar Jandy. I hope I pronounced that
correctly. Hi, Simon.
Do we give him a round of applause?
I've got an applause button, but I haven't learned all the buttons.
That's all right. Don't stress.
There it is. Look.
Yeah, people applauded.
We've got during their service. That's enough.
We've got a very active studio audience here in the podcast. How are you today, Omar?
I'm very well. Thank you, Simon.
Good to have you with us.
Hi, Deanna.
Hey.
Great to be with you again.
Good to see you, Omar.
Now, I'm home in Sydney now.
Back in Sydney. Now, I did mention you were a former with SIM, but you're still with SIM. So
yes,
what are you doing at the moment?
I'm part-time with them as a missions consultant, doing a lot of speaking on global missions, coaching, mentoring mission leaders and helping people, especially those who are open and exploring where might I be serving Jesus. I help them through workshops to try to discern what God might have for them.
Yeah, great. Excellent. And you did preach with us on Sunday as part of our series.
That was on
Redefining Success. So it was a bit of a hybrid between what you've got in the book that you wrote versus merged kind of with the topics of what we're trying to hit in our Think Beyond series.
Yes, to think beyond your success in terms of global missions.
That's it. And it worked very well. So before we dive too far in there, we've all kind of globally traveled, though I feel like we've all kind of globally traveled in different pockets.
True.
But I'll admit that I've tourist globally traveled and I've hit many of the sites that you see on the postcards, but I haven't really gone much deeper or outside of those pockets. But what I was going to ask is, do any of you have a favorite visiting spot or a favorite place you've been out of the many countries you might have been to?
I was going to say, I mean, most recently, South Asia, I can't really say where, but it's always where our workers are. So, I mean, just seeing their context and stuff like that, because I think that one in particular wasn't what I expected. So because it wasn't what I expected, it was more impactful. Of course, then you always go back to the very first one that you ever visited where you saw the developing or the majority world, and that's really impactful too. But yeah, so I can't be specific, sorry.
Sure,
but,
so that's right, somewhere in South Asia.
That's it.
Okay. And yourself, Emma? You've been many,
well,
many places.
Well, I traveled, part of the privilege of being with SIM, I got to travel a lot to 21 countries. And I think, as Deanna suggests, I said, it's about people. So I've enjoyed every single place I visited. Some people might be surprised. Pakistan was one of the highlights for me. You sort of think Pakistan. Yeah, because I really enjoyed the people. I have a fond memory sitting on the floor with a Muslim Hazara leader as he poured out his heart, the suffering of his people being persecuted by the Taliban. And I asked him, would you like me to pray for you? And he quickly said yes.
Wow.
And so that's one of my highlights, is praying with a Muslim community leader who asked me to pray for him and for his people in the name of Isa. But Brazil was also a blast, possibly because it has lots of similarities with Australia, like a good mix, multicultural. And I was able to be there with my daughter. So it was a precious dad-daughter's time, Bolivia, but all the places, I just loved it because I loved the people.
Yeah, that's great. I would, for me saying the touristy spots, I think most recently we did a bit of a Europe trip, and this time it was with my wife and my daughters. And so we were in Rome for a week or for 5 days. And out of all the other places, I think I really loved their trying to understand the age and the history and his old, like, that was pretty cool seeing them with the girls. So that was good fun. So with all that travel then, Omar, what, if we tie that back, is any of that travel and all of these histories, what in, like, where did Redefining Success, the book, come from? What, like, has it been inspired by all
I
that travel?
Yeah, I didn't set out to write a book. That wasn't one of my goals when I was growing up or even more recently. Success has been a theme in my life, partly because I was brought up by a highly successful aeronautical engineer as my dad. Now, he was intense a perfectionist. Now, you want your aeronautical engineer to be intense perfectionist. No plane crashed during his watch. But dad struggled to switch off. So coming home, he was perfectionist and intense. We came to Australia. I was struggling, being the only non-white in the first couple of years of school. I did reasonably well in my studies, and I have a painful memory. Well, many painful memories, but one that showed, I showed him the math exams. I thought I did quite well. I thought he would say that, you know, that's a good job or something like that. Instead, he looked at the questions and he said, "Son, these questions you got wrong, they're so easy. How could you be so stupid?" Ouch.
Yeah, well.
I quickly learned for dad, anything less than 100% was as good as a failure. So I spent so many years of my early life trying to gain my dad's approval. And I finally got that when at the age of age 23, I graduated as a medical doctor. I had a beautiful girlfriend and finally heard the words from my dad, "I'm proud of you, son. Well done." And he was bragging about me to his friends. And I was at the pinnacle of success.
Wow.
But I also discovered success is elusive. Fast forward some years later, the guy, one of my classmates, brilliant doctor, we lost contact, but I heard through a mutual friend, he suicided. Now, he didn't leave a note behind, but I wondered whether he thought he got to the pinnacle of success, looked around, is this all there is? Ended his life. And so success is elusive. You get a taste, you crave more and more. Like, you think about the top 10 wealthy men. Would you ever use the word contentment for any of them?
Perhaps not, yeah.
There's a never enough syndrome. People move into a house, you think they'd be happy. Within 3-4 years, they're unhappy because they just want more and more and more. So
I can speak to that because last week I knocked down my bathroom.
Oh.
ready for a better bathroom.
Well, there was one of the richest men in the world at one time said he was asked the question, how much is enough? And he said, just one more dollar.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Yep, yep, that's right.
So did you find it? Did you find then that was obviously some of the like life forming years for you with your father and things? And then how did your SIM travels or career, I guess, at that point impact?
With the SIM was because from the pinnacle of success in dad's eyes, fast forward some years later when I was convicted, challenged to leave my medical career, to go to a Bible college to prepare to be a witness somewhere in Africa. In my dad's eyes, I went from a success down here somewhere. And we had arguments and he said, "Son, what are you doing with your life? You have a financially secure, prestigious career as a medical doctor in Australia. You're giving that up, throwing away, what for?" Said, "To become a beggar." He knew I was interested in SIM workers. We raised prayer and financial support. Dad said, "You're going to go around begging from your family, friends, and churches." The first year I went to the Bible college in Africa, my dad didn't communicate to me at all. He said, "Why would I bother communicating to you? You're rebellious. You don't do what I tell you. Go your way." Now, when I tell this story, and by the way, I have permission to tell this story. My dad has passed. He passed away last year. But many decades ago, he gave me permission because he came to admit that he was caught up with middle-class ideas of success, though he was a Christian. A lot of people hearing my story think, "Oh, so your dad wasn't a Christian." He was. I had two church leaders tell me, "Why are you doing a foolish thing?" when I was giving up medicine. And one of them said, "You know, we need more Christian doctors in Australia." So out of all that, I, feeling like a failure in my dad's eyes, I cried out to Jesus. And I asked Jesus, how do you define success? Which is a great way. Any dilemma, questions, issues, ask Jesus, dig deep into his word. I studied the Gospels, particularly Luke 12, when in one sentence, Jesus refuted worldly success or middle-class values when he said, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed because a person's life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. Mm. But how do we, including Christians, define success? According to our possessions, the house we live in, cars we drive, etc. So I just kept reading the Bible, studying. I did a sermon series on it. And then in 01, over 20 years ago, when I was a pastor at Nairobi Chapel, we were raising funds because the church was rapidly growing. In 5 years, we grew from 800 to about 2,000 people. We needed to buy land to have a bigger sanctuary. So we're all fundraising, and God inspired me to convert my sermon series into a book. And then more recently, 5 years ago, when I was finishing up 15 years of national director's role, I thought I could revise the book, and that's how the second edition came to be.
You know, Simon, Omar, as you talked, it reminded me of back when Stan was a youth pastor, and we would have parents that their kids would want to go to Bible college and study right at high school, right? And the parents would say, oh, no, you have to do a computer degree first because you have to have something to fall back on. So thought about that, but I also thought about, I wonder how much your cultural background plays into that, because I know in a certain cultural context, we've had immigrants here that when their adult children wanted to go on mission, they're like, we work so hard to have success here in this new country. Why would you go back to the developing world that we left? And it cost us dearly to do that, to do what you're going to do. So it's just, it's almost a slap in the face, but a lot of that, is it a cultural background kind of thing? Because I know success in like the Chinese culture is very driven by achieving, you know, only certain degrees or certain achievements work. Is that true? Or
yes, yeah. A lot of, and it's, there is an immigrant culture. I mean, the first generation of immigrants work the hardest, but after that, they're like Aussies. It's all about the lifestyle and so on. And I get young adults coming to me and said, I would serve Jesus, follow him to another country, but my parents are holding me back, or they tell me, you know, you can't take our grandchildren away. And then I discovered these parents that are holding their children back from following Jesus in his mission are elders or deacons in their church. You know, like, no wonder the laborers are few among the least rich. We've got church leaders. Now, the saddest thing for me is that these church leaders often are sincere, are devoted. They're just blind to the middle-class values, to the cultural values, and they're more influenced by those than the teaching of Jesus. Because Jesus said, if anyone's not willing to love me more than their parents, mothers, fathers, children, they're not worthy of me.
Yeah.
And it really is all about surrender. So I am where I am today because unknown to all of us, including unknown to my dad, my mother, at a mission conference, her eyes were open and she uttered a prayer to God, and I think it was the first of many prayers. She prayed that one of her children might take the good news of Jesus to those who have never heard. Now, she didn't tell any of us because she didn't want to pressure us, but she prayed. God blessed her with not only me, some years after I went, my younger sister also went. She ended up going to China. Different parts and serving Jesus in that way. But my mum was wise. She didn't want to pressure or seem like manipulative. And besides, a good Asian wife has to affirm what the husband's stand is. And you know, my dad was against me becoming a missionary. So she was caught. But she kept praying.
That being caught is an interesting question. Like, how do we deal with that tension of everything the world's yelling at us? Of the materialism and everything, and that's success versus what we then pick up in the Bible, and Jesus is saying right to us, "What's the secret, Deanna? Give it away." And
you know, I like to answer a question with a question, right? So I would ask you, Simon, what do you think holds it back? Or, I mean, what's the scary bit
of
the key to, like, what do it the world's way or the Bible way.
Right. Well, it's probably, is it the, that sense of, I would think that from a marketing background, like which I have, embarrassment is probably drummed into us subliminally through what we don't have. And whether that's through movies or pop culture or anything like that.
Yeah, so your life's not complete if you don't have this new
product. Or what will they what will they think of me if I don't have
this
particular thing?
So that goes into our identity, right? So you're talking identity stuff. But I think that what holds us back as Christians sometimes is, do we really believe that God will take care of us if we give him this, that, or the other? Or even, you know, our whole lives, obviously, we're talking about surrendering in mission. But whether it be success, if I give him my career, if I give him a portion of my income, if I, whatever it is that we turn loose, if it boils down to faith, really.
Trust and faith.
Trust. Do we
believe? You know, we've used that trust word a lot of times on this podcast. It must have something.
It's kind of foundational.
It must have something behind it, I think. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that foundational element.
Right? Yeah. Anything, am I on that tension?
Yeah, I think totally agree with Deanna. It's got to start with our identity. And this is where I think as Christians, we're often so strong on the theory, especially Western Christians who are more educated and we know more. So we sing songs like All to Jesus is Surrender. You know, we sing songs like Christ is Enough for Me, but not really, is he? Because I need to feel better about myself with the house I live in, the car I drive. You know, like even my son, Stephen, that I quote in the book and so on, he admitted, so he's 24 now. He admitted when he was 21, he was embarrassed to drive my, at that time, 11-year-old Mirage. You know, the joke is a motorbike has a more powerful engine than the Mirage. But then Stephen admitted, but I just realized, what am I doing? Why am I so reliant on what my friends think of me? So it wasn't until he was 24 that he could be comfortable driving my Mirage, so comfortable, in fact, that he worked out that he could sell his own car, get a lot of money, and keep borrowing mine. So that's not the problem that I have now. But he's cool with driving a 12-year-old Mirage. All that to say is that we need to be honest, look at ourselves in the mirror. And Jesus said, if anyone is thirsty, let them come to me and drink. I mean, admit that if I'm dependent on what other people say of me, what my children or my parents or whoever, if I'm embarrassed, it shows I'm thirsty for approval. Well, let's turn to Jesus, receive his approval, his strength and security. And out of that, this is what I always talk about, it's got to be from the inside out. I can cope with people thinking, I thought you're a medical doctor. How come you live in a house like this? Hey, I'm a medical doctor. I was a good doctor and I live in a house like this. Full stop. Like, that's okay. And I think that that's under practice. It's a both end, the theory, our security, identity in Jesus. In practice, I can drive a 12-year-old Mirage. I can be in a simple house and I'm fine. Even if people think I'm not, that I couldn't have been a brilliant doctor if I live in a bomb of a house.
Yeah.
So do you think, attaching that to many of the workers that you have worked with through SIM, is there, do people that go to work overseas in mission have to release? Like, so the stereotype is you're going overseas, like what your father was saying as well, you're going overseas, you're going to have no money, you're going to have nothing good, you're going to be poor. That's potentially not very true, depending where they may go. But is it to become, like, I guess I'm thinking for our viewers and things that maybe you mentioned on Sunday, like, are they okay with not being able to shake the hand of someone who knows Jesus in many countries in the world? If success and that stereotype is holding them back, like, what do you have to say to that? Is that something that often has to be released to be able to go overseas?
Yeah, that's where the book, my book, Redefining Success According to Jesus, there's so much overlap with mission work. Now, when I talk about mission, I don't mean just going overseas. I mean local, reaching out to people we study, we work with neighbors. If you're going to follow Jesus, you've got to redefine success, whether you're in Australia, at Werribee, or overseas. Because in Australia, for example, you know, we're being ridiculed for following Jesus. How could you be so stupid, etc.? I've been ridiculed by patients with dementia for being so stupid, believing that God is our creator. You know, that's just part of life in Australia. So you've got to redefine success. But if we're going to serve overseas, we will get left behind. That's just the reality. Most of our workers, we cannot raise the kind of level of income as to live overseas, as in if we were salaried in a similar job in Australia. So most of the time, we're exposed to more diseases. So the first time I took my family, so I met my wife, Kay, in Kenya. We got married, and some years later, after she gained her citizenship, so we were in Australia some years, God called us back to Kenya. By that time, we had two kids, a 2- and a 4-year-old, and I had a pastor blast me, thinking, how could you be so irresponsible? I thought, you're a doctor. You're going to take your 2- and 4-year-old kids and expose them to all these tropical diseases. And I'm thinking, what? This is a pastor telling me I should stay in Australia because I cannot expose. So I'm thinking, when can I take them then? You know, like, anyway, off we went still. And the irony is that our three kids, they got brilliant immune system, neither of the two extremes. They hardly get sick. I think it's because their immune system had lots of practice in Kenya. And then they've never even been hospitalized. But we could be so fearful about these things, and so we need to keep redefining success. But in case there are people who are serving overseas, I would like to caution, we need to keep redefining success according to Jesus. I meet pastors who suffer burnout, missionaries, and I think some of their challenges were they got wrapped up in defining success according to the success in ministry, whether it be the numbers of people, the growing. You know, like if you're going to be a witness in the Middle East, you cannot count the number of converts as your idea of success, or you'll be burnt out. You need to, in a sense, measure, not the harvesting. Often churches, we do that, baptisms, conversions, etc. We need to change the measurement to the amount of number of seeds we sow. Like the number of gospel conversations. So like sitting with a community, Hazara community leader, having the opportunity to pray for that, that's a success to me and in the eyes of Jesus, because I was being God's child, being a witness at that given moment. The guy didn't get converted, but I was able to share the light of Jesus. It's an ongoing, it's a never ending, because we'll always be enticed with different measurements of success.
So Deanna, or, yeah, okay.
Well, no, I was just thinking about my good friend Stan.
Yes, we do know Stan here on the podcast, Pastor Stan, I assume. I assume it's the same.
We have this conversation a lot. It's like, you know, how important is it for the church to grow, right? Because that's a sign of success that your ministry is reaching people and it's making a difference and stuff like that. But you can get caught in that trap of, you know, it has bigger is better, and it just annoys me in that. But yeah, I think that success. I think Omar hit it on the head. It's the sowing of the seeds, because one of the things that we experienced as mission workers, and that I know it's an unspoken pressure that they feel, is to put stuff that sells. You're a good marketing guy. Stuff that sells into their prayer letters, you know. So it's looking at outcomes or fruit or whatever you want to say, numbers and things like that. But we do track the numbers, and you have to ask. At what point do we say, okay, we're doing that for the wrong reasons, I guess? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's the gospel mission in essentially is a numbers game. It's got to increase and it's got to grow, right? But it's it's your value of the success while what you're counting and what you're deeming is.
Yeah, well, it's that counting. Validation, isn't it? We're looking for validation, which I think would tap into what you're saying, Omar, as far as we feel successful when we've been validated that, you know, good job, son, or good job, you know. A lot of times for mission workers, that is reflected in their support levels. Mine's abysmal. I'm still half a day with SIM, but and it's been abysmal for a long time. But with that...
But that you're just happy with that level of success, aren't you, Deanna?
Well, it's just like I just work less hours.
All right.
No, I do what I can do, but you know, we look at that with just the income, our ministry income and stuff like that. Where I used to say we're not sexy missionaries. Can I say that on here?
Sure, you can.
Because the type of work that we were doing doesn't sell as good as, you know, rescuing people from sex trafficking and things like that. So. And so we do even tend to compare ourselves even when we go on mission or when we are successful ministry people, by, you know, well, who's got more support or who's, you know, got more prayer warriors behind them.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyways.
Do you think you mentioned, Omar, in the, like the people that aren't traveling overseas also have, like those that are staying at home also have to redefine the success. Like not everyone's made to go overseas on mission. I won't put that in quotes because they do go overseas. There's not quotations to do that. But for the for those that don't, for those that are like, I'm feeling the local pull, I guess, is it harder for them because they're still in the worldly lifestyle environment? Like how do you then change that to give away, you know, maybe it's different when I've never been to Asian countries, you know, the Middle East, any of that kind of thing. So I've never actually experienced that kind of lifestyle, living cities, cultures, any of that thing.
Can I piggyback onto your question? Because I want to hear what Omar has to say. Because obviously we came to a very prosperous country when we did our mission. And it presented a different type of thing because we were on mission support in a rich city.
Right.
Yeah.
So we felt like poor people. But a lot of the Western workers that go overseas, like to places that are in the developing world or the majority world, they're actually the rich people in society, aren't they, Omar?
Yes, yes. Well, the challenges about staying in Australia is that the spiritual warfare is a lot more subtle. Mm. When you go to the Middle East, Islam is there. When you go to Thailand, there's Buddhism. So you're not in your comfort zone most of the time. So you're more aware and therefore you have a greater felt need for God. And it was easier, again, I'll be blunt and honest, to raise our children in Kenya than in Australia. Because, I mean, like my son, even when he was 9, he used to have arguments with another 9-year-old boy who was a Muslim about who was going to hell. That's not the more friendly type of, in the sense of witnessing, but that's the reality. So you expect these things. But in Australia, and I would suggest middle class anywhere in the world, it becomes more subtle, where there's this whirlpool of self-absorption. This individualism and independence, the consumerism is subtle, the pleasure seeking. Oh, I don't want to be really wealthy. I just want to be comfortable. Well, how much do you need to be comfortable? Well, just a bit more, and so on, as we touch. So we need to be a lot more alert in Australia. The spiritual warfare is Satan used, I think, in Australia. It's primarily through distractions. It's not through people being demon-possessed and foaming at the mouth. It's just the subtle things. Oh, I just need to buy this. Oh, I need to buy that, and so on and so forth. So some of the practical things, I think, is to set our lifestyle at a stopping point. And there again, our poor memory is against us because most people can only remember the house they grew up in when they were teenagers. They cannot remember when they were 2-3-year-olds. So what I've observed, and I don't know if there are any studies in this, is that when a late 20-year-old is thinking about where they're going to move out of home, their level, their starting point is not a granny flat, where their parents might have begun their married life. Their starting point is a 3- or 4-bedroom house where they spent their teenage years.
For those that are listening or watching and they're ready, so they're not necessarily they're ready, they've redefined success and everything, but they're ready to take more steps in mission, local or global, what are some ways that they can get started? Speaking from both two people in here, very well experienced in a mission organization that helps people get started, what are some ways that they can take next steps?
I think Omar already touched on it a little bit, minimize debt. So that's one of the things that a lot of candidates come forward now, whether it be school debt or you know, other kinds of debt. There's all kinds of debt. But to minimize that, so you have to kind of think ahead as far as, like, if I want to maybe think about going on mission to reduce that debt footprint, I'll call it that, so that they're not encumbered.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so that'll free them up a little bit. But, you know, there's other things you can do to get engaged or involved in mission. But I think that a lot of times the debt comes in because we're not satisfied. We want more, 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 and it's just a vicious cycle, isn't it?
Yeah, and I would say start where you are. We're blessed in Australia. Most of the cities, God has brought people from all over the world. They, on Sunday, at Werribee, I met somebody from Iran. You know, I can't go as a witness to Iran. God is bringing Iranians, people from Middle East, to our doorsteps. And the sad thing is many of these people, they don't have friends who are Australians in a sense. So what would it look like for us to go and say hello, get to know them, not to bash them with the Bible or anything like that, get to know them as a human being. Practice hospitality. Invite them to your home. Now, please don't serve sweet and sour pork. Be sensitive. And in fact, often the Muslim family will not come to your place for dinner because they don't know what you're going to serve them. So much better to invite them for tea first, because then they think, I'm going to get biscuits and tea, so I'm not going to eat anything that's not halal, just in case they're going to serve pork chops or something, you know. But practice hospitality. Invite people to our home and journey. Then the other major step, which I did when I was 16, was to declare to my home church, Caramba Baptist, I'm responding to the invitation of Jesus. Here I am, Lord, send me. Please pray for me. Support me, hold me accountable. So tell others, tell your church leaders, and journey with others. It's so important to journey in community, be praying, supporting, and then do the little steps. Start praying for missionaries, supporting them where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Invest financially and practice. So I went to Scripture Union camps to learn how to get over my shyness. I used to be really wounded and shy, withdrawn. I don't think I could do it now, but at that time I was so good I could give a 5-minute talk to children. Like, you know, that's the ultimate test, is whether you could hold children's attention. But that was through Scripture Union training. So get as much training as you can, make lots of mistakes, try to enjoy the journey, and one step at a time.
So Deanna, speaking of telling church leaders, what have we... do we have anything? Like, what if somebody came to you? What happens here at Werribee Baptist Church?
We journey together. We hear the story. We listen for evidence of a call. Like, you know, what is this? I did have somebody come to me and they said, I feel like, you know, this is where I would like to go. And sometimes that gets redirected, and sometimes, but it's a discernment process, really. So it's not a, we journey together as, and God reveals the pathway. So I can tell you a little secret. One of our workers was heading toward another country in South Asia.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, how do I say this? Yes. And, you know, it just didn't feel right. It didn't set right. And I says, well, what about this other option? And there was all kinds of reasons for her to go to the first option. But it's like, no, I just feel this sense that maybe it might be this other place, but you'll have to go check it out. So she did, long story short, 5 years later, she's still in that place of service, yeah. and God is using her greatly. So that's, you know, it's a discernment process. We take it a step at a time. And of course, support coming in is helpful.
Sure.
Things
yeah.
like that. So
so that goes back to when we say to the Lord, here am I, Lord, send me. We need to be careful that we don't put clauses, you know. In some ways, we're all like lawyers. We say, here am I, Lord, send me. But then there's all this fine print, you know. There's good medical care. We have kids, as long as it's good education, good internet, no dangerous terrorists around. You know, by the time you put all that list, you never end up leaving Melbourne or Sydney.
Last week it was interesting. We talked about, or the last episode, we talked about assessing our finances from a living generously point of view, and our finances could be adjusted for God's mission. And it's interesting that you can basically, this episode, just substitute finance with lifestyle. And I think it's a good opportunity for us this week to all just assess our lifestyles. And is there, can we identify, you talked about like a ceiling or a stop on the lifestyle of like, yeah, maybe I've got enough. And we'll try not to say, maybe if I just get to there, I'll have enough. Like maybe we've already got enough. And we can, like you say, we can redefine that and have a look at how what we do have is good enough.
So the word functional, I think, is more than the aesthetic, because if you do aesthetic, it's just never enough. Functional, and that way then we can give more. And then if God calls us overseas, as Deanna said, for Kay and I, we went heavily into debt. The rental was able to pay off our mortgage, and that was even the days when it was 14% interest. So God is able to sustain us, but we do need to be practical and not borrow so much that the rental cannot pay the mortgage repayment.
Well, let's wrap things up. So thank you, Omar, for having a chat with us, carving out 30 to 40 minutes of your time with us today. Now, the book, redefiningsuccess.com.au?
That's right. So yes, it is available on redefiningsuccess.com.au.
Yep.
Or if you go to Werribee, I did send another box of books to be available this coming Sunday, or well, for the next couple of Sundays or whatever. There's also an ebook on the redefiningsuccess.com.au.
Yep.
And then for anyone who's seeking to be open to discern, I will do a workshop after Easter on discerning God's purpose. So the details are also on redefiningsuccess.com.au.
We can put a link to that in our episode. And if anyone's, so that's to see Omar about the success part. And if they're sitting there going, I'm ready to go overseas, Pastor Deanna, they can go and see Pastor Deanna over here and have a chat. And then we'll send flocks of people overseas, not just overseas, into the world, into the community in the world.
Even across the road. I mean, we used to say if you can't cross the road, then you don't need to cross the ocean. Yeah. So it starts right here.
Love it. All right. Well, there's the music. Thank you to both of you for hanging out with us.
Thank you, producer Simon.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Simon.
That's all right. Deanna. It's been good fun.
Thanks,
good WBC. To see you, Omar. Yeah.
And we will see everybody next week, and they can jump on our socials. We're on Instagram and we're on YouTube. Like and share, forward this on to someone that you think you know, maybe you know that they want to go overseas, and you can poke them with that.
Right.
And we'll put the link to all of this in the episode descriptions, and we will catch everyone around. See you next time, everybody.
All right. See ya.
Bye.